If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you very much for joining us. Over the weekend, Sunday, to be specific, at 5:30, I'm going to be down at the College Basketball Experience to begin the festivities for the induction ceremony for the National Collegiate Basketball Hall of Fame. I will be conducting the red carpet interviews as the inductees arrive, and you can watch that on the Sports Radio 810 Facebook page. We'll do that via Facebook Live on Sunday at around 5:30. Tim Duncan, John Stockton, Scott May, Bo Ryan, Paul Silas, just great names, great college basketball coaches and players. And another one of the inductees that we're lucky enough to have on the show right now who will be there, Jay Williams, who was an outstanding player for the Duke Blue Devils, now joins us now. And, of course, Jay Williams with ESPN now. Jay, good morning. Congratulations on your induction into the National Collegiate Basketball Hall of Fame.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm sitting here at 36 years old. I'm like, should I be in this class? Like, is this a little bit quick? But I'm not going to say no to it. I'll tell you that.
Well, I tell you what, you look at this class, and for me, I'm so excited not only to get a chance to see you and talk to you on the red carpet, but Tim Duncan. But growing up, my favorite basketball team was the John Stockton, Karl Malone, Jeff Hornacek, Utah Jazz. I loved watching John Stockton play point guard, so selfishly, I'm excited about getting a chance to talk to him as well. But when you look at this, Tim Duncan, John Stockton, Bo Ryan, the former coach of Wisconsin. This is one hell of a class that you're a part of.
Yeah, man. You know, I've known a lot of these guys for a while. When I came into the league, Tim Duncan was the Spurs, and got a chance to play against John too. So, you know, USA Basketball and watching John, the things he was able to accomplish at Gonzaga, and then obviously on with the Olympics and knowing Bo for a while and what he was able to build with the likes of Frank Kaminsky and Sam Decker and all the great teams he's had over at Whiskey. And I know even Paul Silas, watching him coach in NBA and knowing of him growing up and the stature he had as a big-time basketball player, I feel like I'm going to be a little kid there too. you know, I'm sure they're going to ask me a couple of questions, but I have so many more questions for those guys for what they were able to accomplish in their career. So I just feel lucky enough to be there, man. It's going to be a great day with my family and I.
So obviously you mentioned only 36 years old. I mean, look, we've talked when we've had you on the show before, and you've talked a lot about the accident that cut your NBA career short. But obviously that's part of the reason that you're probably going into this as early as you are. But I mean, that's got to be kind of cool to think that nobody's forgotten how tremendous of a basketball player you really were.
Is this Nate? Is that you, Nate?
This is me. How's it going, Jay?
How you doing? First off, how you doing, man? I love you. You come to me with like the straight radio voice. Like we don't have any prior connection to this whole thing.
Well, look,
he's
man,
a professional, Jay.
Yes, he is.
I missed out on the fantasy camp last year. I were you there this last year? I didn't get to go.
I didn't get a chance to make it, man. So my fantasy camp experience was your fantasy camp experience, brother.
In which my team did not win a single game, well, by the way.
But, to
echo what Nate's saying, and let me just remind people, you led Duke to a 95-13 record during your three seasons, including a 2001 national championship, two-time consensus All-American, NABC Player of the Year in 2001, Consensus National Player of the Year in 2002, ranked second in assists per game, steals per game, third in made three-pointers, and seventh in scoring average of Duke history. What a phenomenal career when you look back at everything you accomplished at Duke. And look, this was, you were the best player in the nation. Tell me maybe a favorite memory or two from your time at leading Duke to all those victories.
Well, I have a lot, man. You know, it was funny because sometimes I've been in my new career for the past, 13 years as far as being a broadcaster and executive producing pieces. And, sometimes you forget what it was like to play at that level, even though I still play all the time. And, we just did the Champions Classic where Duke went against Michigan State and Grayson Allen went for a frenzy and he dropped 37 points. And, I'm traveling the next morning and I'm watching SportsCenter and it says, hey, other memorable Duke players to drop 30 or plus, and I was at the top of the list because I had 38 against Kentucky, and they're showing highlights to me back in 2001. And you're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I'm even in this conversation, right? And they show J.J. Redick and Grayson. So, look, being lucky enough to be the second pick in the draft and playing for a guy like Coach K, obviously there's a lot of time missed that I felt like I could have had as a player, but still I think that pales in comparison to the person that my experience is have pushed me to become. So this is a moment where I get a chance to thank those people that were part of my journey. And I had a lot of people that bailed on me. And it was a very tough lesson to learn at 21 that, hey, sometimes life forces you to pivot and it might put you in a direction if you're lucky enough that maybe you just didn't even able to kind of assess at that given time that you expect. And you have to make the best out of the cards that you're dealt. So for me to be able to be in this room with my mom, my dad, and people that have went through 13-plus surgeries with me and, all the things I dealt with psychologically, I couldn't ask for a better scenario, man, because in the big scheme of things, playing maybe 10 years in the NBA would have been great, but I won, man. I won. I'm still here, and I still have my family, and I still have something to talk about.
And you're killing it in broadcasting, which we're all a fan of watching and following everything that you're doing right now in that regard. So it is a cool study in the pivot that's happened in your career. By the way, for our listeners that didn't hear this a couple years ago, when Bill Self has his fantasy camp, I got a chance to participate in it, and you were one of the coaches. That's what we were talking about earlier. You said something, yep, to me then, because you just mentioned a second ago that you still play basketball. I was asking you about your knee injury back then, and you said, look, man, my knee's doing great. I play ball with some really good former, big-time basketball players all the time now, and I can hang with them. But you said something that put into perspective to me how maybe we in the Midwest as a college basketball community underestimate what it means to play in the league. And you started listing off all the different point guards that you would have to go up against in the NBA now, day after day. And that you might be healthy now with your knee injury, but in terms of being able to compete at that level, I mean, that is something that maybe I wonder if we really appreciate how hard that truly is to compete in the league against that type of talent game in and game out.
Well, Nate, that's not just people in the Midwest. I mean, that's people everywhere. Everybody, a fan of the game, thinks it's so easy, and it's easy to sit back and to, say, oh, hey, this guy should be doing this, or you hear the inevitable thing from fans. Oh, that guy's a bum. He barely plays. And I'm like, wait a second, man. That one guy who's like the ninth guy at the end of the bench is, part of 0.0001% of the world that plays basketball in the NBA. He's definitely not a bum. Maybe he pales a little bit compared to the, the super, super elite players, but this dude is still pretty elite. And so, when I play in pickup games, like this past summer, I had 38. And, we're going against a couple of guys, and people are like, why don't you still play? I'm like, all right, well, let's put it into perspective. If I were to play, who would I have to play against every single night? Like, if I were playing, for the Knicks, you go against D'Angelo Russell one night. Okay, D'Angelo Russell's really good. Then you play Boston, you go against Kyrie Irving. So D'Angelo Russell and Kyrie Irving on back-to-back nights. You have one day off, and you go against Kyle Lowry. Then you go out west, and you're going against, the biggest players out west, even if it's Lonzo Ball and the style in which they play, they run. You're going against OKC and Russell Westbrook. You go against Portland and Dame Lillard. You go against Memphis. You go against Mike Conley. And then you have to go against the Clippers. You're like, oh, God, I have a night off. No, you don't. You have Patrick Beverly picking you up full-time 24-7. So the level that you have to compete against day in, day out, four games, four nights out of five nights, so four nights out of six nights, the turnaround and your ability to be healthy, that's pretty tough, man. It's not a walk in the park. Just because you can play doesn't mean that you can play at that elite level every night.
All right. For people that are interested in attending and being a part of this weekend, go to HallOfFameWeekend.com. Tickets for both the induction celebration and the Hall of Fame Classic available now, HallOfFameWeekend.com. All right, let's talk a little bit about college basketball. And again, people, if they want to follow you on Twitter, Real Jay Williams is your handle. You retweeted this story yesterday. With momentum gathering to reshape the one-and-done draft entry rule, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver and NBPA Executive Director Michelle Roberts met with members of the new Commission on College Basketball in Washington, D.C. on Thursday. League sources tell ESPN. What do you think will happen? What do you think should happen? Kansas always has one-and-done guys. Missouri fans now are still waiting to see Michael Porter Jr. When he gets recovered. So this could affect us here. All the college basketball fans listening, what do you think of the future of the one-and-done rule?
Well, I think the one-and-done rule will be gone. I think, you know, I was talking to Adam Silver about this during the draft, and I think he's constantly open for this conversation. Essentially, you know, kids don't have to really go to school. So, you know, what we're saying is, hey, serve in a year's internship if you choose to go to college, build your brand, and then move on to the NBA. But I think kids should be directly able to go to the NBA from high school. I also think kids should be able to forego, if they choose to, go into college and go directly to the G League. Adam Silver can still keep that 19-year-old age minimum. And if you decide to go to the G League, if they increase the pay, which they should, it's almost highway robbery what guys are playing for in the D League. They increase that pay wage, then go there. And if you go in and when you're 16, you have to stay in until you're 19. You know, guys should have to go to college for 3 years. I still think we need to get to this point where there's some kind of rev share opportunity for these players that decide to graduate. It's almost the same system that baseball has but there's no reason that college should be the farming system for the NBA. That should be the G League, or a kid should be able to go directly from high school. So I think we're going to see changes like that. And the only reason I say the rev share part, guys, is our game is starting to get to the point where the money is just absolutely ridiculous. Now, I know you still have Title IX and some of these, you know, these other issues that you have to worry about. But the fact that, you know, CBS is getting the tournament for $10.8 billion and they just did an extension for a couple other $6 or $7 billion. We wait until Amazon, Netflix, or Apple start to play in this live sports content market. If the tournament is going for that amount of money now, you wait 5 or 6 years when the tournament's up. The tournament's going to be going for $40, $50 billion. You have coaches now. I can compare the top five coaches on the collegiate level salaries to the same salaries of the top NBA guys. There is no difference between college and the NBA right now, with the exception of the way the fans see the game. But this pay-for-play model is something that's actually, you know, it's been in play for a long, long time.
You know, one of the things I've been thinking about, Jay, with this is that, you know, like some people suggest the baseball model where you can go right out of high school, but if you go to college, you got to stay for 3 years. But one of the differences also, though, in baseball, you can get drafted and decide if that draft spot was good enough to forego college and then pull yourself out of the draft and then go to college. Do you think there's a way, is it even a discussion or a realistic thing? Because I think one of the big concerns is like Michael Porter Jr. If he decided to go pro, he'd get drafted really high. There's no debate. There's no question about it. He's only in college because he has to be. But there's a whole lot of guys who think they should get drafted, who have a higher opinion of themselves than maybe the league does. But if maybe they got the reality of, hey, you got drafted, you know, in the second round, you can pull yourself back out and go to college. Is there any chance of something like that happening where kids can make a more informed decision on whether or not they want to go to college or be in the pros?
Think about this question that we're asking, guys. Let's put this in perspective. Is there any chance in asking if this could happen that kids can make a better informed decision? Why wouldn't there? This is my conundrum. Why wouldn't we allow the kid to make a better informed decision? Because coaches are complaining, we're putting them at a fault because it's more difficult for them to recruit. I'm sorry, you're making $2-3 million a year. It is going to be difficult to recruit. So as much as we want to sit here and say, hey, you know, it's going to be a challenge, and you know, how come it can't be? It can be. We have had antiquated rules that people have abided by for so long, and people are like, well, it's just the way it is. And it's, well, why is it that way? You know, why? why can't kids make better informed decisions? Why is it taking us forever to get to the point about allowing a kid to go to the draft combine and then coming out of the combine and be like, all right, I'm not ready. I don't understand this. And this is the kind of archaic way of thinking where, you know, fans in this modern day, like, we're getting, you know, fed up with this. So let's stop acting like, you know, this is not a multi-billion dollar industry and that we're just not feeding or preying upon these kids. And that's my main qualm with it. You're exactly right.
Do you think we're going to see some more major fallout from what recently happened that led to the demise of Rick Pitino at Louisville?
It's a slow unraveling, man. And, you know, it's I think every college kid to some degree has kind of broken a rule, right? I mean, you know, you could it's like when I was in college, if we went out and you want to pay, you know, for dinner and the owner comes up to you and he says, hey, man, this one's on me. Like, hey, no, this one's not on you. I have to pay for this meal. Like, come on. You're breaking the rules if you do that. College kids have done that before. So the fact that, I don't know, it's kind of mind-boggling. You have not heard of any college coach get indicted, right? Because college coaches have money where they can fight a lot of these things in a federal court. So considering these things are federal crimes now is kind of beyond me. There's no reason for kids who play, you know, high school, you know, tennis to get paid to get an endorsement, or, you know, perhaps some college coach or a coach in general that pays for their training. So the fact that these kids can get paid in other sports, but just not in basketball and football, is it's an NCAA violation. I don't know if it's a federal crime, and that's going to be something to be very curiously watched as we continue down this path where we're labeling guys as cheaters and crooks. And I don't know if we should be labeling them that way. Once again, I know people get mad about this, but who are the real big crooks? You're talking about if college coaches or some assistants, you know, try to pay some players to have them come to the university or help out their family. Are we really calling them crooks? Or are we really calling the people that are profiting billions of dollars off these guys? Are we calling them crooks? I don't know.
Yeah, it's all pretty fascinating to me. I mean, like right now we see Billy Preston, he's getting sat at KU. Because he's got a car, and they got to figure out how he got the financing for it, and all those things.
And come on, now, and Nate, that happened an hour before the game. An hour before the game, like I saw Billy Preston shoot around. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Bill. I was talking to all the guys. You know, Jarrett Howard, who is a good friend of mine, assistant coach there, and they're expecting him to play an hour before the game. He can't play. Like that's a media blitz. Like that's trying to set some kind of example. Like that's kind of a joke. Like how come you just let the kid know? You've known about this for a while. How come you just didn't let them know that beforehand? Those are the scenarios where it kind of makes you lose your mind.
And so in a much different situation, but still a lot of hand-wringing and upset fans, like I said, we're still waiting to see Michael Porter Jr. really make his debut for Mizzou. You've got a kid that's going to be a top three pick in the NBA draft. He's got an injury that might be a little hip injury, a back, we're not sure. But that's... That's a concern. If you're going to be a one and done, you got to think about your future and everything else. How difficult is it for Konto Martin or for everyone around him to handle this? You want to win at Mizzou, but you also got to take care of this kid's future. So you got a lot of things working.
This is a business, man. And I think kids are recognizing that it is a business and they're surrounding themselves with people, if you want to call them quote unquote advisors, that talk to them about this guy. They inform him about this kind of stuff. You know, I said this last year with Harry Giles because Harry Giles had a lot of injuries, and he was trying to rush to come back and play, and it worked out for him great. But you have to start thinking about yourself as a commodity, and you say, hey, if I'm hurt, if I try to come back, and if I play it, if I'm not ready, I'm still going to be assessed on what my game is right now, and does my current game, does that decrease or increase my opportunity on where I'm going to get drafted? So if you're Michael Porter Jr., and you're having this debate about whether you're the first pick in the draft, and you have the fan base is like, come on, play. You know, we want to see you play. We want Missouri to do well. And Michael Porter Jr., you're like, that's great that you want Missouri to do well, but this is my career. This is a chance for me to make $175, $200-plus million, and I don't want to lose in my draft position. So if I don't feel like I'm 100% healthy, why do I need to hurry back and rush to play? I'd rather take my time. And you know what? If I can't come back this year, I can't come back this year. And I have to work out and start getting ready for that next step, which is being the number one pick in the NBA draft. If they're comparing me to Marvin Bagley Jr. That's the business of the game. Everybody else treats it as a business. It's time the kids start treating it as a business as well.
We're joined by Jay Williams. He's part of the 2017 Hall of Fame induction class for the National Collegiate Basketball Hall of Fame this weekend here in Kansas City. Now, you mentioned Beat of the Champions Classic, and seeing those two games, Duke looked terrific. Grayson Allen was awesome. Michigan State hung there with him. That was a hell of a game. And then Kansas outlasted a very young Kentucky team. What was your what were your major takeaways from watching those two games in Chicago?
I've never seen Michigan State get out-rebounded like that. And that shocks me when I think about Tom Izzo's teams, the toughness that they usually have, especially on the defensive end. Duke got 25 offensive rebounds. Duke got more offensive rebounds than Michigan State got defensive rebounds. That said something, even though the word has been that Michigan State has so much depth with their front court. And that was without the number one pick in the draft, or number two pick in Marvin Bagley Jr. He only played 10 minutes in that ball game. So I think that's going to be a concern for Michigan State moving forward, and their ability to shoot the basketball. Like, Matt McQuaid did not look at the rim one time when he caught the ball on the perimeter. And Joshua Langford is a good guard, but he hasn't shown the ability to knock down the three ball consistently at the level he would like. Duke is really, really good. I mean, Trayvon Duvall is a stud. He has, I think, 30 assists to one turnover right now. And Grayson is healthy. They're loaded with front court talent as well. They're going to be really, really good. I can expect to see them in San Antonio for the Final Four. Kentucky surprised me. Kentucky's really good. They're young, even though they had some fights against Utah Valley and Vermont at home. They're a very young team. There's some questions at the point guard position. You know, you think about the great guards that Cal has been able to have between Derrick Rose and, you know, De'Aaron Fox and Tyler Ulis and Brandon Knight. The names go on. And, you know, Quade Green. And, you know, they need to see what he's going to become. But I like the level they played at that night. They showed me a lot about the fact they can still win the SEC. And then for KU, the only question is going to be their front court depth. You know, getting Billy Preston, you know, that scenario figuring itself out. But, you know, Udoka Azubuike was a man. Nobody could stop him. And I'll tell you, the fact that they were able to get a couple of guys to buy in, I always wondered about the guard that came over from Mississippi State, his ability to buy in, right? Because a lot of things when he was being recruited were about him. He got catered to. And now watching the fact that he has bought into the Bill Self offense and the defense kind of left me with my mouth open. Like, wow, okay, like this kid can actually really, really play, and he fits in. And then if Legero Vick continues to play the way he played as a defender and a guy that can score the ball, you know, you combine that with Devontae Graham, this team has a chance to get number 14, which is beyond me, 14. I mean, the fact that Bill Self has won more regular season championships than these lost games at home at Allen Fieldhouse is like one of the most mind-boggling stats I think I've ever seen in my entire life.
It's going to be historic if they do it, and it doesn't look like there's any true contenders in the Big 12 this year, which will be interesting. Jay, before we let you go, I'd really quick answer to a really quick question. Who's better, the Celtics or the Cavs? I mean, when they get to the playoffs and it really matters.
I mean, when the Cavs get IT back, I think the Cavs will slightly be better just because they have guys who understand how to win. But that's right now. Next year, the scenario will be different. Mm. I mean, I truly think in a seven-game series, next year, the scenario will be different. LeBron is getting older. He can't play that amount of minutes. Dwayne Wade is older. Their team is good. But the weapons that Boston has, if they keep growing at this rate, next year, Boston will be in the finals. I still see Cleveland in the finals this year with the Golden State Warriors.
Jay, thank you for the time, and once again, congratulations. I will see you on the red carpet on Sunday as I'll be doing the interviews, and really is an honor to be able to be a part of this event. And again, on behalf of everyone here at Union Broadcasting, congratulations on your induction, and we look forward to seeing you on Sunday.
Thank you so much, man. Talk to you guys soon. Nate, keep working on your game, brother.
Believe me, I'm a lost cause, but I'll
keep
do what
working.
I can.
He'll never give up.
All right, guys.
Thank
Take
you,
care.
Jay. That is Jay Williams. Again, just a really terrific class of inductees, including Jay Williams and Tim Duncan and John Stockton. I just cannot tell you how excited I am to be able to do even just a quick one or two question interview with John Stockton on the red carpet. You know how much I love John Stockton and Karl Malone and Jeff Hornacek. Oh, boy. That's going to be fun. And so you can watch that as I do the interviews on the red carpet. You can watch that on our Facebook page at Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll do that on Facebook Live Sunday at around 5:30 or so. Be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.